Tov. Good morning, everyone. This is Radio 104.6 FM. Shalom. Today we have Rabbi Levi Wyman Kalman and his wife, Paula. And they actually just came over from Israel to help the Reform community in New Zealand. And yeah, so first, Shalom, Paula.
Shalom, shalom, hello.
Shalom.
Hi.
So, just tell us a bit about yourself, Rabbi Levi. Why are you here first?
Well, I was invited to come by Beth Shalom, the Reform community here in Auckland. My sister was here last year. My sister is also a rabbi, and she served the congregation for the High Holidays last year, and she had a wonderful time here with Beth Shalom and with her travels around New Zealand. She had such a great time, and she insisted that we come here next year, and next year is here. And I'm on a sabbatical, Shnat Shabbaton, a sabbatical year from my congregation, so we have time to travel. So we're going to be in New Zealand for 9 weeks, starting now with Limud, which is at the end of August, and then through Simchat Torah, through Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Sukkot, and through the holidays. Then we'll have a few weeks to travel around the South Island, and then we head back to Israel.
Oh, that's wonderful! So you're gonna talk in the Limud program. What sort of subject you're gonna talk about?
Well, I'll be teaching a text from an Orthodox rabbi. Chaim David Halevi was the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv for many years in the late 60s and the 70s. And he has a very interesting halachic writing, a psak halacha, a ruling that he made about the responsibility of the Jewish state toward its Arab citizens. And it's a very interesting approach to how a country has to deal with its minority in general, but it's, in particular, it's about how Israel has a responsibility to its Arab minority. And it's from the point of view of an Orthodox rabbi. So it's a pretty interesting text.
That's very interesting. Can you just say one or two lines about it?
Well, it's actually it's a text that I like because it's very different from our liberal sensibilities, which says it's obvious that you want minorities to be treated well in your community, and especially since Jews have been a minority in so many countries. His perspective is a halachic one from the point of view of someone who's very committed to Jewish law. So he roots it in the biblical and rabbinic teachings, and it's very much from the perspective, goes back to the time of the Bible, of the relationship between King David and King Saul to the minority that lived in the land of Israel then, and how the Jews then were responsible to take care of the minorities living in the land then. And he learns from that how we have to treat the Arabs today in Israel as equal citizens.
Okay, we're not going to tell our audience everything that's going to, you know, be in your lecture. So when is that going to happen? What date?
Actually, I'm not sure. It's either Limud is 2 days, Saturday or Sunday. So somewhere in the schedule.
Okay, I think it's next week, next weekend.
Yep.
Or is it this coming weekend?
This weekend, yeah.
Oh, it's this coming weekend.
Now, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So it's going to be Saturday and Sunday.
Saturday and Sunday. I'm okay. Just doing one session. There'll also be a panel of Ask the Rabbi. There'll be a lot of rabbis attending, so there'll be a chance to ask rabbis all kinds of questions that people have been having on their hearts for a long time. And Paula also will be participating in Limud.
Okay, well, this program is actually going to be broadcast this coming Sunday. So if you hear it at 10 o'clock in the morning, don't forget to rush.
Hurry over.
And hurry over. Go there to Limud. Okay, so just tell us a bit, because we don't know you very well, the community. I would like to know a little bit more about your background. Where did you grow up? How did you decide to come and be a Reform rabbi?
So I come from a rabbinic family. My father was a rabbi. He was a rabbi in the conservative movement in the United States, which is one of the liberal movements, along with the Reform movement. But he grew up in an Orthodox home. He grew up in an Orthodox, in a Hasidic home. His father was a Hasidic rabbi. His grandfather was a Hasidic rabbi.
Wow.
I'm the 10th generation in a row of rabbis in my family, but my father already broke from his Orthodox upbringing and became a more liberal rabbi. He was born in Vienna, but grew up in Toronto, Canada, and then got to New York, where he studied to be a rabbi, and there, thank God, he met my mother, who is the daughter of a Reform rabbi.
Did he get any objection from his own family once he tried to break this ties to the Orthodox Hasidic rabbinic?
Yes, they were very, well, he was a teenager when he left the world of Orthodoxy, and then World War II broke out, and he joined the Royal Canadian Air Force. So, it was a big trauma for his family. All of his brothers were Orthodox rabbis. His sisters almost all married Orthodox rabbis. All of my cousins are rabbis. So, it was a big family crisis. But my father was very devoted to his family and worked very hard that we maintain close relations, both with the Orthodox side of our family and with my mother's family, which was Reform. My mother's father was a Reform rabbi in Chicago from 1904 to 1954. He was the rabbi of one congregation for 50 years. And both families didn't quite know what to make of each of the other one. The Hasidic family looked at the Reform family and thought that they were more American than they were Jewish. And my Reform relatives looked at the Hasidic family and thought that they were barely civilized, but luckily for my parents, it worked out. And like I said, we maintain very strong ties to all of both sides of the family to this day.
So the main reason for you becoming a rabbi is you kind of try to continue the leadership within your family?
Well, of course, for the longest time, the only thing I was sure of was that I would never be a rabbi. The last thing I would be a rabbi. I worked very hard to figure out something else to do.
What did you used to do?
Well, I studied acting, but I found that I was spending a lot of time leading worship services and teaching. And I always say the day I decided to become a rabbi was the day that I decided that just because it would make my parents happy, that wasn't enough of a reason not to do it. So I accepted the fact that it was something that I seemed to be genetically engineered to do. That was already in university. I was already very involved in Jewish life. And then I applied to rabbinical school. And then I studied to be a rabbi in New York, but right after I finished my rabbinic training, the next day, I basically moved to Israel.
How it's like to grow up in American society, you know, being a Jewish.
Well, I grew up in New York.
Student in New York. How it's like?
I grew up in New York, surrounded by Jews. I went to a Jewish day school. So I loved growing up in New York. New York, considered one of the greatest cities in the world, very exciting, and Jewish life there is very rich. Just so many different ways of being Jewish, so many different options. But I found that when I got to Israel and I got to Kibbutz Gezer, I found that I was very drawn to living in Israel, and that, to my surprise, I felt more at home in Israel than I did in the United States as a Jew.
Yes, even though you were born in...
Even though I still love New York and love, I feel very grateful to America for being so welcoming to, you know, immigrants and to allowing such a rich Jewish culture to evolve there. But there's something about living in Israel that I find very, to this day after...
What is this something? Can you describe
it? I'd say it's a feeling of being part of making Jewish history. For the first time in 2,000 years, we have a restoration of Jewish sovereignty, something my grandparents, both of my grandfathers, both the Hasidic rabbi and the Reform rabbi, were passionate Zionists. Neither of them could have imagined the state of Israel with Jerusalem at its capital and with a vibrant Jewish life and the Reform life there. It's not an easy place to live. Our children served in the army, and it was very, it's financially also very challenging to live in Israel. When I look at my colleagues, especially in the United States, Jewish life is much easier. But again, there's something deeply engaging about being a citizen of the State of Israel and being involved in Jewish life there.
So tell us a bit about your work in Israel as a rabbi. What do you do there? How do you contribute to the community?
Well, 32 years ago, I founded my own congregation. I was, after we left Kibbutz, We spent a year in London and then came back to Jerusalem. And I was determined to start my own congregation, which we started in our living room, which was a little bit difficult with two little kids at the time. And very quickly, the congregation evolved from our living room. We found a place outside of our home, and the congregation began meeting. My congregation became famous some 26 years ago because on Simchat Torah, when we were dancing with the Torahs, and of course men and women participate equally in Reform Judaism, so women were dancing with the Torahs. So one of the local rabbis came into the congregation, and when he saw women holding the Torahs, he got extremely upset and tried to take the Torahs away, and as he felt he was rescuing the Torahs, there was sort of a wrestling match over the Torahs.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was very dramatic, and this was with hundreds of people in the congregation dancing and singing with the Torahs. And luckily, we resolved that issue pretty quietly then because we were able to push the rabbi and his supporters out without any violence, but it was in the newspapers and radio and television. It became a national story in Israel then, again, 26 years ago, that Orthodox rabbi led an attack on a Reform synagogue, and then, of course, it became international news and was all over the world. And that's how my congregation became a little bit famous in those days. And then I went on fundraising trips and built a building. So we have a building. We have about 320 members, families that are members of the congregation. Again, started 26 years ago. So now when it was started, it was mostly young single people. Then it became married couples, then became families with little children. Now it's a lot of families with their kids in the army. So we also have a school. We're part of a Reform network of schools that we have in throughout Israel, but also in Jerusalem. We also do a lot of social action work in the congregation.
Like
in,
what?
Well, we work in the neighborhood with one of the things we feel strongly about is since many Israelis looked at us as a some kind of an import from the United States, so we decided to turn that into a positive thing, and we offer free English lessons to kids in the neighborhood.
That's great.
So the schools use us, and we have once a week we have programming in English for kids in the neighborhood. We also have a very intense relationship with a residence for special needs adults that come to the congregation. We go there to be with the residents. Once a year, we close our congregation and do the service there with them. Also, we do a lot of work in our congregation with refugees in Israel who are from Sudan or Eritrea. Since one of the commandments in the Torah is that you have to treat the stranger equally and make sure that they live in a decent and humane way. So we do our best. We go to where the immigrants, there are detention centers, and we bring them blankets and books and computers and try to help out. So we're very involved in social justice issues in Jerusalem in particular and in our neighborhood, but also in Israel in general.
So you're particularly working in around the area of Jerusalem?
Yeah, we're very much a local congregation, a neighborhood congregation. Most of the people live walking distance in the neighborhood, so it's a very strong neighborhood feeling in our congregation, though people come from all over.
So what's your future plans for your congregation?
Well, good question, because this past year we began, after my having founded the congregation 32 years ago, and I'm just turned 64, that we hired a new senior rabbi, and that I'm now changed my position to be the founding rabbi and not the senior rabbi, and now I'm on a year sabbatical, which will be 9 weeks in New Zealand, and then we're going to spend the rest of the year in Tel Aviv, which will be a big change for us. Jerusalemites are notorious for not going to Tel Aviv, and Tel Avivians are notorious for not wanting to go to Jerusalem. Our two older children live in Tel Aviv, so we want to be near them. So we're going to be spending the rest of the year in Tel Aviv. What happens after that is still unclear. We'll see.
Yeah, so how many children do you have?
We have three kids. None of them are kids. They're all grown-ups now. And
they'll always be your kids. Doesn't matter.
Yes.
What age, yeah. And they always come back with an interest.
Well, they're all
more kids.
They're very interesting. All three of our kids are very interesting. Our oldest daughter is a professor at Ben-Gurion University. Her field is comparative literature, and she specializes in Yiddish literature. She's doing interesting things in that field. She lives in Tel Aviv and commutes to Beersheba. And our son up till now has been in a program, a doctoral program in neuroscience at Tel Aviv University, but he surprised us this year by announcing that he is dropping out of the doctoral program, and in just a few weeks he'll be opening a preschool, which has been his lifelong dream, for kids aged 6 months to 3 years. And so that's pretty exciting. And part of my plan for next year is to spend at least 2 days a week helping him out, since one of the things I like to do in my congregation is hang around the nursery school. So he's doing interesting things. He's married to a woman who is in a doctoral program in neuroscience also. Our oldest daughter's partner is a human rights lawyer who specializes in transgender law. That's Ido. And our youngest daughter lives in New York, and she just finished a degree in computer science and is working in the field of computers, and I couldn't explain what she does.
Okay, so near you sitting your darling wife, Paula, and someone told me that she's also a documentary filmmaker as well. So that's interesting. Hello, Paula.
Hello, hello.
Okay, tell us a bit about yourself, about your work.
I've been making documentary films. It's my fourth career, though I realize I've been doing it for over 20 years now, so it's pretty long time. It works well with Levi's interest in the congregation. I picked up a video camera and discovered that I'd love asking people questions like you do. And I'll be showing a few films at Limud, but it'll be too late by the time people hear this. So I specialize. What I really like to do is I like to make sound people nervous when I hit the table. I like to make documentary portraits of people where I can talk to them and interview them. And
you like the connection with people.
I like the connection with people.
You like to work with people and bring the story out.
Yeah. Right, and the truth is that I'm very shy, and that's why I like having a camera. When I have a camera in my hand, it's really easy for me to talk. But it doesn't mean I want to be invisible. But I do like the view, the lens that the camera gives me.
So you're going to film the Limud?
No, actually, I'm not going to film Limud.
Oh, okay.
I am very happy to be here.
And just enjoy it.
Just enjoy.
Exactly. So tell me, what was your first film that you did?
Well, that's really interesting because when I started making films, I had very small expectations that I would just make like filmed birthday cards or filmed, you know, messages from people in Israel to their parents in America. I was very... I didn't have big, big dreams. And then someone in America saw a birthday card I'd made with Alice Shalvi, who's a prominent Israel feminist who's very influential in Israeli society. And they had her saying, "Happy birthday." And so they commissioned me to make a documentary about her. And I followed her for a year with all sorts of things, and I learned how to use a small camera so that I could do all the work by myself. I like doing the filming and just being on the ground with them. So it was a wonderful experience making the movie, and someone in the States saw it, and it was bought by ABC. So it was an ABC special, which was extraordinary. A librarian, and so it was like very strange. Things don't usually happen like that. As a matter of fact, I made the movie when she was 70, and that was 20 years ago. And right now I'm working on an update of her when she's 90, because she's done so much since she was, in the 20 years since she was 70. And so I just think it's my way of connecting to people, and it's my way of adding some beauty to the world.
Do you still making films?
Yeah, I'm still making films. Still.
Is it difficult to raise money in Israel for documentary films?
Israel has a lot of different funds for documentary films. I'd say I spend half my time raising money, a quarter of the time making the film, and a quarter of the time trying to get people to see the film.
And so the main source of the money comes from Israel or is from overseas as well?
For my films, I get a lot of funding from overseas and from Jewish American foundations and individual donors.
Okay, what's your favorite film that you did so far?
I did. Well, I made a wonderful film about, Levy was talking about the community of people with different abilities that are very connected to the synagogue. And there were two women who came to shul, and I was just fascinated by their lives. They were, you know, in their late 60s, and they wanted to have a bat mitzvah. So here are these women with developmental disabilities, 60 years old, wanting to do a bat mitzvah. So I followed them for a year, and just saw they worked in a factory where they filled bags for birthday parties, and one of them developed breast cancer, and we accompanied her through that. And then in the end, she had a bat mitzvah, and it was just beautiful. So that's my favorite film. It's called Blessings, Roommates in Jerusalem.
Oh, that sounds great. So if you want to view it, how can we see it?
They're available through my distributor's Ruth Diskin in Diskin Films, if you Google.
Oh, she actually been here, and I met her.
Oh, how fabulous.
I know Ruth Diskin.
Oh, yes. That's hysterical. Yes. Yes, and she's also our neighbor in Jerusalem.
Okay. And I just did her daughter's wedding.
Yeah.
She's a wonderful woman.
She's wonderful. So if you Google Ruth Diskin and Paula Wyman Kelman, you'll come across my films.
Okay, so tell me in today's terms, how much does it cost to go and produce a film in Israel? What's the standard? How much do you need to look for?
It's any kind of range, anywhere between, I'd say,
minimum
$40,000 minimum, but that's really minimum.
What do you think is the major thing in filmmaking? What's the emphasis? The mix, the sound?
If the sound is the least bit wrong, it just pulls you out of the film. You can handle a picture that's a little bit fuzzy, but if the sound is bad, you just want to scratch your eyes out.
Okay, so tell me how it's like to live in Israel together, being in the Reform community, having to deal with sometimes maybe the Orthodox in Jerusalem. How it's work?
Well, we're very lucky that we've been part of a community that's, well, if my kids were here, they would be saying that we live in a bubble. And I'd say that's not inaccurate. We live in a very tight community that we feel very supported by. I've also been able to feel like I've made a real difference living in Israel, to be part of people's lives for so many years and help them raise their children by helping create a school. So even though there are difficult days as a Reform rabbi in Jerusalem, I mean, there are days when I wake up in the morning and turn on the radio and hear myself being attacked by an Orthodox rabbi who doesn't like what I do. That's sometimes hard to cope with, the fact that the Orthodox rabbin in Israel is so committed to trying to stop the Reform movement and convince Israelis that we don't have a place in Israel. But it's been amazing over the past decades that I've been there to see how the Reform movement has grown from just a handful of congregations to today. There are tens of congregations, over 60 congregations all over Israel. So despite the relentless attacks on us, we've been able to thrive. Also, Israel does not have a separation of religion and state. In other words, the religion is supported by government funds. The taxes that we pay go into the government, and the government has a Ministry of Religious Affairs, and that ministry pays for the building of synagogues and the salaries of rabbis and for yeshivas, for schools, but of course only for Orthodox Jews.
Yes.
Of course, it also does pay for mosques and imams.
I didn't know that
absolutely.
One.
Absolutely. But with Jews, only for Orthodox Jews. And when it comes to...
So you can be either an Orthodox Jew or Arab to get that funding.
Funding, correct, you have to be part of a recognized religious community, which is only Orthodox Judaism or...
Or imam.
Or a Muslim. Or the Christians also get some funding. And also, as a clergy, I'm not recognized by the state. So members of my congregation who want to get married are not able to have their marriage recognized when I do the wedding.
So what do they do? How do you get it recognized?
Most of them hop on a plane and go to Cyprus for a few days.
Oh, I love it. Just been to Ayia Napa a few months ago.
So, like I did my niece's wedding not so long ago. She and her husband flew to Cyprus. There they were married by a Greek Cypriot civil servant who gave them a marriage license. They brought that marriage license back to Israel, brought it to the Ministry of the Interior, and that way they were recognized as married. And then we did a completely traditional Jewish wedding that was quite wonderful. In fact, if you would come on a walk with me through our neighborhood, you'd see something very strange, that when I walk by the dry cleaner or the greengrocer, when they see me, they don't say Shalom Rabbi, they say Shalom Elvis. How did I get the name Elvis?
Yes.
Because about 25 years ago, one of my congregants flew with her fiancé to Las Vegas to get married. And they, of course, were married by an Elvis impersonator who was recognized by the state of Nevada. They brought that marriage license back with them to Israel to be recognized as married. And then we did a beautiful traditional ceremony overlooking not far from the Western Wall. And they filmed both ceremonies and they brought it to the Israeli news. And this was in the days before cable and satellite TV, so there's only one television station, so everybody watched the same news. And they broadcast the two ceremonies with a split screen, and the news anchor just said, and which wedding is recognized by the Jewish state? And, of course, the answer is the wedding done by the Elvis impersonator, not by the rabbi. And since then, I got the nickname Elvis, which I kind of like. Thank you very much.
Okay. So any plans you have in New Zealand? Like, there's any special places you think about visiting or something
well,
you want to do?
All of our friends who have been here just keep telling us about all the amazing things we have to do. It feels like we don't have anywhere near enough time. We do love to swim, and we do love hot springs. So we're looking forward to hot springs.
There are plenty of them in this country.
We've been getting lists, and I know our timing isn't perfect, but we can handle
swim. I think it's going to be a little bit cold.
We can handle cold water swimming, yeah.
Okay.
We're ready. So that's our plan is really just to enjoy the natural beauty and feel a little bit distant from all the stress of living in Israel and to have to make new friends.
We've had such a wonderful reception from the Jewish community here. They've been so welcoming, and they're so exciting to see such a really vibrant Jewish community.
Yeah, I'm very impressed by how Beth Shalom is. The lay leadership there is so serious. And I'm used to being a rabbi where I really run the show. I founded my congregation. I'm pretty central to it. Here's a community that's been doing very well with lay leadership, and I'm very moved to see that, and I'm looking forward to learning from them.
Okay, thank you very much, Rabbi Levi Kalman and Paula. I welcome you to New Zealand. We usually say Kia ora in Maori. We will say Shalom as well in Hebrew. And I wish that you'll have a great time in New Zealand.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Shalom.
And for you, to all our listeners, don't forget to listen to us every Sunday at 10 a.m. at Planet FM. Or anytime on planetaudio.org.nz. And of course, thank you very much to our sponsor, Nature B. Shalom velitraot.
Yeah.